I'm excited about the future because I think it is a truly human-centered future. It's a future where we are more enabled by technology. So we are freed up to do things that are truly human as HR, which we haven't had the bandwidth to do.
They keep telling us that it's all over for HR. The age of AI is upon us, and that means HR should be prepared to be decimated. We reject that message. The future of HR won't be handed to us. Instead, it'll be defined by those ready to experiment, adopt, and adapt. Future-Proof HR invites these builders to share what they're trying, how it's going, what they've learned, and what's next. We are committed to arming HR with the AI insights to not just survive, but to thrive. Hello and welcome to the Future-Proof HR podcast, where we explore how forward-thinking HR leaders are preparing for disruption and redefining what it means to lead people in a changing world. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, CEO of Cleary. Now, today's guest is Nicole Desane. Nicole is the founder of The Talent Imperative, a boutique consultancy that helps organizations reimagine the employee experience through human-centered design. A former Accenture executive and in-house HR leader, Nicole has worked with global brands to build innovation capabilities and drive people-centered transformations. She's also the curator of HR Hackathon Alliance, a global community of bold HR innovators, and she speaks on the future of work, employee experience, and the intersection of HR and AI, something we're about to do right now. And Nicole's mission is simple, to make work more human. So welcome to the show, Nicole.
Thanks for having me.
So tell me, is work not human these days?
That's a great question, especially in times when we talk AI and, you know, possibly in the future replacing humans with artificial intelligence. But I think the key is that we need to live in coexistence, right? And historically, I believe work has not been as human as it could have been. And that has a lot of reasons. As you referenced, I grew up in HR. They're my heart. They are my people, but there's a lot of reasons why HR has not been as human-centered as it could have been, right? You know, process, policies, risk avoidance. It was not designed as a function to be human-centric, even though it has human in the title, right? So, and obviously for-profit companies, they always tend to prioritize profits over people. That's another sort of stereotype versus realizing that people drive the profit. So there's a lot of those things that have been going on traditionally. But I think the ultimate vision for me for HR is to create truly human, or co-create rather, because they can't do it alone, co-create truly human-centered workplaces that are enabled by digital technology.
I love it. So then, as you're alluding to, in the age of AI that we're rapidly moving into now, does that pose a different type of challenge for HR in helping make the workplace more human? Because I think you've had this mission before this current revolution, right? So how does this current place that we're in inform that?
Yeah, I think it's interesting because ultimately when we talk about AI transformation, I believe it's not a technology transformation, but it's a people transformation, right? In the foreseeable future, we still will need people who operate these systems or who provide input into these systems, right? And I think that's why I think a recent MIT study came out saying 95% of AI pilots fail. And one of the reasons I think is because we have viewed it more as a tech transformation and have used it and do something with it and ignored human behavior, human habits, human motivations in it. And I think that's where HR is uniquely positioned to co-design this transformation.
So this podcast episode came together because I actually reached out because I thought you made a very interesting post about a personal transformation. But before we get into that, there was an input into that I thought was very interesting. It turns out you're referencing a survey of, I think it was CEOs, mm-hmm. right? And the CEOs are saying, and they're looking at their C-suite, the executive team that reports to them, and rating them on their belief of how AI savvy they are. And interestingly, I think the headline is more about how CISOs and CIOs who should be leading the charge, there's not even like a close to 100% confidence over there. But you notice that CHROs were the laggard, right? So they were the least AI savvy representative in the C-suite, according to CEOs. So tell me more about your gut reaction as you read that.
Yeah, my gut reaction, to be totally honest, was being defensive initially. Again, just my people and I'm like, we're not that far behind. It's like, is this perception? Right. Is this reality? Who rated the CEO, by the way? So a lot of these very defensive reactions. But then I sat with it and I looked in the mirror and I'm like, I haven't developed a good daily AI learning habit myself. So I'm like, okay. But Gartner also said in this study or a related study, 71% of AI transformations succeed if they're co-created or co-led across the entire C-suite. So conversely, if HR is not invited to the table, it could possibly be disastrous for the organization and the people in it, right?
Okay, so you went through that moment where it's like negative feedback. It wasn't even, they weren't calling you out by name, Nicole, but it felt that way, right? But interesting. And then that's an interesting counterpoint that you also present, because if the HR team is involved in the AI transformation, that means that everyone is, right? If everyone is, then HR definitely is going to be a part of it. We'll get to that, I think, in the latter half about some of your thoughts on how HR can actually lead such a transformation. But first, let's talk about your personal story. So you had this gut reaction, and then you're analyzing all the different ways this can go. But then you set about a challenge for yourself. Tell me more about that.
Yeah. So in August of this year, I was recovering from minor surgery. Nothing bad. I'm all good. I used that sort of as a nudge. I couldn't do much else as a nudge to create for the month of August, a 30-day learning challenge for myself around AI. And it wasn't about a mastery. It was really about curiosity and engaging with one piece of related content a day. That could have been an article, a podcast, a video, a demo. And I had a backlog of articles and resources that I had saved over months, and they were just unstructured, unread. So they served as a starting point for that exploration.
Can you be more specific for me? What were you looking? So you were just trying to get your hands on just understanding different tools, or are you looking to understand foundationally what is AI, or specifically HR or human-centered design related use cases for it? How did you think about all of this? And I'm just asking this question because I feel like a lot of us get stuck in that exactly the place that you mentioned, where you're constantly seeing information about AI on different lenses, but maybe putting saving things for later. But it sounds like you created a little bit of structure on what you want to actually learn about within this very broad world.
So initially I didn't. I was really just broadly exploring and just building a habit. And by broadly exploring what did emerge, I'm somebody who easily spots patterns. So as I was looking through it, first of all, I realized this is a real valuable exercise, because I felt like every day my confidence grew a little bit more, my understanding grew a little bit more, even by just engaging with one little thing a day, right? So I'm like, what if I could share this with others and maybe as inspiration? So that's when the idea was hatched to curate the 30-day AI for EX learning challenge. And then I looked at it more with that lens, right? What then is applicable to HR leaders and in the context of employee experience? And that started to create a little bit more focus for me.
So let's talk about that focus there. So yeah, exactly. What did you come up for yourself and for HR leaders as the equivalent of a 30-day sprint to learn, with a goal of being more confident, right? Where maybe going back to that survey, the CEO might rate you, maybe that's not the ultimate goal, but let's just say CEO would rate you specifically higher, right? In terms of confidence and capability with AI, which would be useful.
Yeah, so I'll share some of the types of resources, and then we can link the details to the post in the show notes so people can look up the exact resources. But I think along the way, to your point is, and what I wrote in another article that you're going to talk about later is, as you engage with these resources, what's really important is that you share your lessons learned and your reflections publicly with your peers in your organization. So you become more visible as a learner and as rolling up your sleeves, and not as somebody who is afraid maybe of technology and then perceived as not wanting to embrace AI. So I think that's the key. And that's why I also share this publicly, as to hold myself accountable and share what I've learned. So I think that's a tip I would have. And yeah, so the types of resources, there are two books that I referenced, and we actually also shared those with our students at Northwestern, where I'm adjunct faculty, The Digital Mindset and Co-Intelligence. Because I really wanted to start with books that were written by academics, because sometimes I feel like we don't embrace science enough in HR. So, and these are books that are written really more to understand digital mindset, AI at a strategic level. It's not so much tactics, which change daily anyways. The tools change. And Ethan Mollick, who wrote Co-Intelligence, has a Substack. So he shares updates every day. The book was published a year ago. Obviously, some of the content is already outdated, but he tried to stay high level, right? So I thought these are really a good base to start with. And then if you just pick one book to start with, read one chapter every evening and just take notes. How does it apply to the workplace? How does it apply to what you can do? That was the one area. Then I curated 10 LinkedIn voices to follow, people from different geographies, demographics, a combination of analysts, practitioners, consultants. Really wanted to have a round perspective of voices, skeptics, ethicists. So people within who apply AI within HR, but also outside of HR, but in areas that I think are good for us. And these people have been applying at AI or researching or working with AI for years. They're not overnight sensations. So wanted to create a curated list of voices to follow. And then just, you can look at that list, follow these folks, and then, you know, comment on their posts or engage or learn from them daily. And then bookmarking to resources. So there were some toolkits there that I thought were really interesting to dig into. One is actually created with AI, where you can, whenever you have sort of an employee experience or workplace challenge that you might want to approach with AI, you can just dig into those and use those as resources. Then I list the two podcasts that you can watch and listen to. Again, you know, as you work out or move, listen to those and think about, let the ideas marinate as you go through it. And then I ended it with a 30-day challenge that you could try. How could you apply AI to redesign an employee experience moment? Yeah, so those were sort of the categories of things that I curated.
Yeah, and we'll definitely add a link to this more specifics, but that concept of just building a habit, doing it in 30 days, different types of resources, academic, as well as operational and in the weeds, high level and down and dirty practical, as well as then finally getting it into something for your actual work is a great approach. Now, let's talk a little bit more about, your recommendations and the way, let's start high level. So you've been focused on human-centered design and specifically employee experiential design in the workplace for some time. How does AI now coming into the fore change, if anything, around the structure of how you engage with clients or think about the workplace and the employee experience?
Yeah. So first of all, maybe let's define human-centered design or design thinking. For those who are not familiar with it, it's a framework, mindset and methods for complex problem solving, what we call wicked or gray problems. So anywhere where there isn't a playbook, right? So AI is the perfect example. There isn't a playbook of how you implement it in an organization. Human-centered design, and again, if you want to do it in a human-focused way, is a great method to tackle AI transformation. Yeah. So we've seen more companies coming to us, especially with the recent stat around 95% of AI pilots fail and organizations taking a pause and realizing maybe we should approach it more as a people-centric transformation. So they come to us, but they don't know how to get started. So the way we engage really in all of our projects, but also around AI adoption projects, is we start with what we call discovery, listening, empathy interviews with employees, employee experience, journey mapping, and then we launch into co-creation with employees, design sprints, so ideation, prototyping, and so forth. So we apply similar approaches that we apply to all people transformations, employee experience redesigns, to AI adoption projects.
Got it. So then tell me about for these projects, right, where you're doing, I guess the kinds of things that you're doing are the employee journey mapping and user interviews and all those things that is getting you the raw materials for what a transformation could look like. When you're doing that, what are some of the common barriers that you're finding either from the HR team or from employees that would prevent a project from being successful? What are the kinds of things you discover?
Yeah, so when it comes to adoption, so it's the barriers to adoption, there I would say three that have bubbled up. So one is around, I don't know, and we try to phrase them as though an employee would say that, I don't understand the value of AI. So that's one, not because either the direction was vague or I don't actually know how it applies to my work, my workflow, the tasks that I do. Secondly, probably the biggest is how can I trust that I still will have a job? Mm-hmm. I mean, that is the underlying fear of a lot of employees. Yeah. And then thirdly, will I be given the room or do I have the room to experiment and fail in essence, right? Do I have to be perfect? So those are the three, I would say, high level and biggest barriers that we're seeing.
And then before, we're about to solve all of those barriers.
With the employees of the actual organization, right? That's the beauty of design thinking. You don't look necessarily only for those best practices because they don't apply to your organization. You co-create solutions with your employees.
Let me ask then about the HR team specifically. If you just bubble up these three main barriers to adoption across, let's call it like a workplace, are you seeing anything unique in terms of barriers for HR professionals in terms of adoption?
Overwhelm is one, definitely. And just so many tools out there and new tools spinning up every day and understanding, do I need new tools? What does our current tech stack look like? What does the adoption or the AI roadmap look like from our vendors? And also pressure from CEO, for example, again, and sometimes vague direction. I want that everybody uses AI. Okay, what does usage mean? You log in every day, you experiment with AI, right? And then maybe not having the confidence to ask critical questions around what does usage mean? Or let's think through how we define usage and then how are we going to measure it?
Mm-hmm. This has been a fantastic conversation so far. If you haven't already done so, make sure to join our community. We're building a network of the most forward-thinking HR and people operations professionals who are defining the future. I will personally be sharing news and ideas around how we can all thrive in the age of AI. You can find it at gocleary.com/cleary-community. Now back to the show. Yeah, I can see when you talk about that, when you have a lot of these initiatives that are failing, it's almost no surprise when the goal hasn't really been actually set. It's just saying, let's get an enterprise-wide license for this tool and everyone get in there and magic, but or some outcome. So that's going to be difficult. So then what do you think the role can be for HR? Because you mentioned the opposite, right? So companies that do some of these transformations successfully and answer some of these three key barriers to adoption successfully tend to have the entire C-suite, including HR, very much on board. So in such a positive outcome, and the case studies are still building and a lot of companies, I think, are still in experimentation mode. But as these case studies are building, what do you think is the emergent role of HR specifically to play in such a broad company-wide AI transformation?
Yeah. And so the article that you mentioned and that we'll link, I define what I think four roles are that HR could play. So one is that, which, by the way, I find exciting. I find this is an exciting development for HR, these four roles. So one is that of a strategic partner. And I know we've been talking about that for years for HR, but I truly think this can be the opportunity to be that and do that. And what does it mean? So that could mean that you facilitate conversations among the C-suite around asking critical questions. What do we want to accomplish with AI? How does it fit into our business strategy? Because by the way, then you're also seen as a business operator, right? Because you are able to talk about strategy and how AI fits into our strategy, right? And you can facilitate these conversations. To me, that is being a strategic partner. And again, you're not giving the answers. You're not the owner. You are facilitating it across the C-suite. Secondly, the role of a critical thinker. I brought up critical thinking before. Honing your questioning habit and really thinking through what are the important questions we, again, collectively need to answer in the beginning and throughout. The third role is that of a connector. AI transformation is truly cross-functional. So HR is uniquely positioned to connect the dots between business, technology, and people across different departments. And how might that look like? For example, by facilitating journey mapping for different departments to identify AI opportunities in workflows. And then the last role I call is being a humanist and really centering the human in the conversations. When we talk about becoming AI-first organizations and rationalizing people out of the organization and replacing them with AI, is HR only brought in at the back end to conduct the layoffs? I hope not. I hope we are part of the conversation early on and we are the advocate for the human in this conversation.
So these are great, like four types of roles that you're saying like an HR leader or HR operator can take on in enabling not just their function, but the entire organization's transformation towards being AI native. But is that possible? Is there like an uphill battle because of the perception, which you talked about at the top, right, with the survey, that it's like, because I think that might be even, I'm just channeling something, someone thinking maybe that's all fine, but if I try to do that, people will say, what is Thomas doing here trying to like talk about this topic?
Sure, it's a little bit like the chicken and the egg, right? Absolutely. It's if you have not built this trust, and this is true for all other kinds of initiatives or transformations when it's about leadership buy-in and having a seat at the table. Again, I recognize that. We have been talking about this for years, but there are CHROs and HR functions who have been able to build that trust and who have been able to become that strategic partner. So if you're already there, you can build on that and just use previous precedent, in essence, and strategies that have worked for you to advance this conversation. And if you're not there yet, then you need to start with the basics. Again, work out loud on your own AI literacy so people can see it, can build trust over time. And yeah, build trust with the CEO and with each member of the executive team. Sometimes whenever I'm a new HR leader in an organization, the first thing I do is I talk with every executive and find out where are their pain points, what's going on in the organizations. By doing that, you build trust and then go from there and tie anything to their pain points, speak their language. I mean, it's the basic things for how we have to operate anyways as strategic HR partners.
I love that insight. So then can you give me some more and a more crystallized idea of how I might co-create? Because I think that's a key word that you've mentioned. And also just now you're talking about all these other executives as your stakeholders, mm-hmm. arguably your customers in as the HR leader. How do you co-create the need for, doing an employee journey mapping with an executive, a VP of sales, and work on a project together that really feels like it's something that's meeting business needs versus being this separate HR project?
Yeah, I would start with what's your workflow with the biggest pain point or where you feel there is the biggest leverage for AI? That would get you the biggest leverage, not just incremental, but the biggest. So there's a philosophy. Sometimes you start with the biggest pain points in design thinking so you can show big wins, or you can start with something small and safe. Again, so I would say it depends on your relationship. So either start with the big bang to make a great splash, or start with something safe. But tie it to what they mentioned is their big pain points, and then just say something like, hey, why don't we try to just map this out and see where exactly, first of all, do you have this workflow documented? Because we need that for AI anyways. No, you don't. Okay, why don't we do that? And then while we do that, we can identify opportunities for improvement along the workflow, which include AI opportunity, but might also include other innovations. Are you okay if we try that? That's how you make them collaborators, co-creators. To me, it's always sometimes that relationship between HR and leaders can feel almost parental. And I like to really partner. I mean, they're leaders. Yes, some are more skilled than others. Sure. They have their opinions. They're leaders for nothing. So let's partner on it. And we both have a stake in this, right? They want to improve this. They want to get impact out of it. And I want to help. So if you position yourself as the one who enables them, helps them, supports them, versus the one who throws, you know, only up barriers. And again, I think it's a delicate balance because we do need to surface things that maybe business leaders haven't thought about when it comes to AI. So that's that balance as a strategic partner, being able to do that while also solving their problems at the same time. That's why we're in HR. We do that all the time, that balancing act, right?
Yeah, your customers are your stakeholders, and yet you're also creating boundaries for your customers
at the same time.
Being a consultant, quite frankly. So I've been a consultant inside as an HR leader and outside, and it's really a consultative skill. It's not, oh, it's my customer and they want X and I give them X. No. Part of it is coaching, is educating, is co-creating. That's what consulting is.
Absolutely. So yeah, that's, and you're a consultant to the organization, right?
And sometimes it's telling them the things they don't want to hear.
Can you go through an example or two where we can combine human-centered design and maybe journey mapping or some kind of tool set or tool from your toolkit along with AI, where you can see like kind of imagine a CHRO working, co-creating around a particular problem set, figuring out how you might go to end up having an AI-driven solution together.
Yeah. So let's think about if we think about the employee experience end-to-end journey, and if we think about which moment or sub-journey there has probably the highest impact to be improved by AI. I don't know. Let me ask you, which one do you think? I have an answer, but I'm curious if you have an answer. Which one would be the one where HR would get the biggest impact, you think?
Oh, man.
Sorry, I'm catching you off guard. I can answer that.
I mean, to be a bit biased, I think, well, the biggest leverage for me is all of the shared service and support stuff that HR is doing, but because it can be a leverage point, because any hour that you free up can then be leveraged for any other type of project. But that's my particular bias. But I think you could say in the talent acquisition world, there's a ton of things. There's in performance management, in manager upskilling, L&D, theoretically. Is this all an L&D exercise? I don't know.
Those are all, and all of them have potential, right? I would just, as I was reflecting on this, what came to my mind as the probably highest leverage point, because there's so many interactions from so many different people and departments, is onboarding, the onboarding journey, right? So you have recruiting, you have IT, you have payroll, you have the hiring manager. And every touch point is a potential for breakdown, right? And quite frankly, I have mapped onboarding journeys a lot on all these breakdowns come to the fore, and some of them definitely could be tackled with AI, right? So if you think about, could there be like large language model intake bots who pre-fill forms based on candidate information that's already available? Could there be like chatbots that new hires could engage with real time for some basic answers? Could there be like some predictive models that alert HR if the badge hasn't been issued? I mean, you know, those are all pain points that I've just in general onboarding journey mapping have always come up in almost every company I've mapped them for. So I think there's so much potential. And then guess what happens? The time of the HR professional gets freed up and they can provide that human touch to the new hire, which is so important because it's such a vulnerable time when somebody joins your company newly. They're super excited, and then they have this big, usually not a great experience. From I've studied onboarding my entire career, which has been pretty long now, and designed many onboarding programs, and it's usually not a great experience, right? And so I think a lot can be automated, augmented, but a lot then can be freed up to provide that human touch.
Yeah, so if I were to abstract that out a little bit, I think the more touch points and the more complex the number of internal stakeholders who are providing support to get through a particular moment in an employee journey, the more probably there is room for improvement with AI. In yesteryear, you'd get as far as mapping the journey, getting to those problem standpoints and saying, we're going to, I don't know, automate reminders or tasks assignment to make sure the thing gets done. But now you might be able to go a bit further than that and get it to being automatically done in certain cases as you zoom in. But I think we're largely in agreement there because a lot of the point there, while some of that is about the front-end employee experience, a lot of it is about the fact that HR, IT, finance, legal can't deliver consistently because of the overwhelm. And so the AI is really is increasing the efficiency in the back end. And really, it'll be a better employee experience there for onboarding. But a lot of the value and leverage is then hopefully the freed up time that can go towards, you know, so much other kind of work that they could do. So thanks for going through that. And just to take that upstream, because we talk about co-creation, onboarding, because I've worked on that a lot as well. And that's a great place for co-creation. It's usually who's the VP who's hiring the most or has the highest churn or has managers who are going crazy from hiring and seeing people quit within 3 to 6 months. They have a big problem and they will have a key. They will want to co-create this with you, right? That's a great example. And then can I ask then, that's one example. There's many others around like any part of the employee journey that you can go in and implement. But you said there's kind of two ways you could go at it if you're trying to just get started. So one is you might think of the biggest thing that can have the biggest impact, or you might say, let's start like really small to make sure we get like our feet wet. One aspect of that was, I think you kind of alluded to, is about risk. I don't think it's particularly unique, but there's some unique elements with AI versus any tool or any new process with data governance and PII. How do you think about, let's say there's two different possible projects that you could with relatively equal value, one with higher like data risk and one with like lower risk. How do you think about that element when you're actually trying to get to an outcome?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great sort of factor to factor in where to start when we think about AI and using a design-led approach. And to me, it's make your CIO your BFFs. It's my answer to that. Now, I always tried to do that when I was internal, make your CIO your CFO your BF, because, and then literally, you know, you are not the experts in this necessarily. I'm not the expert in this. And hopefully you have a trusted relationship with them so you can go to them and say, hey, explain this to me like a six-year-old, like I'm a six-year-old. And let's co-create this together and let's talk about the risk. And I'm not quite sure. I'm thinking we might want to do this. Can I just use you as a sounding board to talk through potential risks that I might not be seeing, where I might have blind spots? So I think partnering across the organization, again, is critical because you might not have the skill to understand data privacy risks around this tech yourself.
Great advice. So let's close out maybe, Nicole, by talking a little bit about the future of the function, the way you see it. Hopefully work can continue to be more human and HR can be a part of that. So what does that HR team and leader look like to be that's a successful one in the coming years?
I think you closed it really well, better than I would have said it. Yeah, I'm excited about the future because I think it is a truly human-centered future. It's a future where we are more enabled by technology. So we are freed up to do things that are truly human as HR, which we haven't had the bandwidth to do. And we can be more empathetic. We can be more creative. We can be more strategic, finally. So that's my hope. That this is going to really impact our ability to leverage our ability to create truly human workplaces.
I love that. So thank you for this conversation, Nicole. You're doing a lot of interesting things. How can people follow along on your journey if you're going to do another 30-day sprint, or even beyond that, just in general, everything that you're doing?
Yeah, LinkedIn. is the best. That's also where I shared on my learning journey. I have a Design Thinking for HR LinkedIn newsletter. You can join the HR Hackathon Alliance, and our website is talentimperative.com.
Okay, thank you for this amazing conversation. We've talked about a very introspective Nicole here who took a challenge and responded. And I think maybe created a bit of a blueprint for others who are really trying to be introspective and say, okay, like, let me go and attack this problem and build confidence from within before you can start cultivating it from without, or maybe that will come again. And it goes back to some of these things we've been talking about in HR for getting a seat at the table and having a chair in the front row, all those things. And there's an opportunity to really do that, but start with yourself, learn. And then there's projects. I love this approach of just thinking about the entire employee journey and what is an area or two that you might want to co-create a new experience, a better experience alongside your key stakeholders. And then just go deep, dig in, whether you go for a big swing or a small one, do that in partnership with especially the CIO, everyone else. And there's a real big opportunity here. So I love the optimism. And folks, please follow along as Nicole shares more about about people-centered transformations. And for everyone following along, good luck as you continue to future-proof your own organizations and your own HR functions. Thanks, Nicole. See everyone on the next one.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Future Proof HR. If you like the discussion, make sure you leave us a 5-star review on the platform you're listening to or watching us on, or share this with a friend or colleague who may find value in the message. See you next time as we keep our pulse on how we can all thrive in the age of AI. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slackbot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, gocleary.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.